a large number of silly people.
Disturbing.
I find it sort of wonderful.
This is the Extra Hot Crate Podcast, episode 322 for the week of September 28th, 2020. I am easily reproducible back scarring David T. Cole, and I'm here with Grandpa Horde Sarah D. Bunting.
Smells like cat pee.
Simple Protein Tara Ariano.
Serve me to school children.
And just a fanboy, Devendra Hardawar.
Please put the spoon down, please.
Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Joining us for the first time from Engadget and the Slash Film Podcast, it is Devendra Hardawar. Hello, Devendra.
Hello, Devendra.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Yay.
We are here to talk about the Amazon adaptation of Utopia from Gillian Flynn.
Gillian Flynn.
Not David Fincher, as was originally discussed years and years and years and,
wow.
and
so, years ever ago. So young.
So sad. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that, I'm sure. So, brief series premise recap for you. A cult graphic novel called Dystopia apparently has a sequel, Utopia, that has been discovered in a hoarded house. Fans want it, but so do a couple of very determined and ruthless assassins. A crew of friends from a dystopia forum who've just met for the first time at a con discover that they're next on the hit list and go on the run with the help of a character who apparently stepped straight out of the pages of the book. But whom are they on the run from? And then toward the end of the first episode, there's also an outbreak of an extraordinarily lethal and fast-moving flu. Uh-oh. This is an adaptation of a show that Dave and I have talked about. It premiered in the UK in 2013 and has never, to my knowledge, been available commercially in any legal form here, I don't think.
It's kind of been toxic, nobody wanted to touch it.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Which is maybe good for this adaptation. We'll probably get into that too. Some people have flown to England to consume it. So spoiler warning, all 8 episodes of the Amazon version all dropped at once. So we may talk about the entire series. This is your official warning. And we will do the official Dave Chen check-in, so named for Devendra's Slash Film podcast colleague, Dave Chen. We'll go around the horn and just quickly say before we get into the spoilery nitty-gritty, should people watch this show? Devendra, what is your verdict?
I will say up front, I really enjoyed watching the show just because it hit that nerve of like a great entertaining paranoia that I really enjoyed from like some of the X-Files stuff, from some of their Lone Gunman stuff. It felt so distinct and different than most of the other shows we're seeing today, especially compared to like all the freaking superhero shows where it just feels like they're all just trying to one-up each other in terms of being terrible or something. I enjoyed watching it. I would really recommend it to anybody who enjoys that type of thing, like great paranoia thrillers. I feel like it's good. It's messy, but it's certainly entertaining.
I agree that it is messy. There is a certain just sort of dearth of that sort of programming for those who enjoy. It's like when I used to really love watching the History Channel, and if it has something to do with World War II, I was there watching it, and then suddenly they didn't have that programming anymore. So in the once in a while at 2 o'clock in the morning when they were so I'd be like, yay, let's watch it. So I feel you on that part, Devendra. I will very much agree with you that this show is messy. You will probably enjoy it more if you don't have the original to compare it to, because I couldn't help but do that. The original, while it is not like all-timer television, it oozes so much more style than this one produces that the new version sort of suffers by comparison.
I agree with that. And I also would add, if you're the kind of person who loves art that invites or demands, you know, blog posts that are like fan theories about this or that, like this is the show for you. That's not really my jam, even though I really liked the first series when I watched it. I don't know if it would hold up as much if I watched the whole thing again. We just watched the pilot last night.
Let's put a pin in that because I do want to talk about that, but we cannot talk about it within the Dave Chen.
Okay. Okay. I would say if you watch the original, I don't think that this is essential.
Yeah.
Sarah, what did you think?
I only got a couple episodes in, and I don't know if this is like a more general recommendation. Like I think it's well made, but I just sort of was not motivated to keep going because it just felt like we were not getting to, like, never mind a fireworks factory. Like, can we get to a cache of sparklers in one of these plots at some time? Like, it just was very concerned with scene setting in the beginning, which was like, oh my God, like I used to recap a reality show about actual cosplay competitions. Like, I don't need this level, honestly, of kind of withering, like, here's a guy in a bunny head. Like, all right, Gillian, we see you.
Yeah.
Also, who does not say rad? Where's that coming from? Like, what world do you live in? Anyway, I
think that may be a generational difference. I have not heard that word since like 1998. I will say that. So I feel like that is the Wilson thing, you know?
I've been trying to bring it back since 1998. This isn't quite there for me. Like, I wasn't upset. I don't think it's bad. It just is not moving quite fast enough for me at this point in my life, and particularly compared to some other things that I'm watching right now that are like, understand their own pacing for their own demographic a little better. This is just kind of like a BB minus for me.
Yeah, I will say, just hearing everybody's description, the way I would like to describe it is it's not nearly as sharp as I wanted it to be. I feel like all the pieces are there for a compelling story because I enjoyed it the first time around, but this one felt a little fuzzy around the edges and a little slow and a little dopey sometimes, and I just wish it had a little more oomph.
I agree with that. And before this season dropped, I didn't know if Amazon was going to do the thing it's doing with The Boys, where it's just doing one episode a week. And now, as we started watching, it was like, oh, I see why it did all at once, because it's definitely much more sluggishly paced, I think. Like, it has a lot more hand-holding than the original did. And as Sarah said, a lot more scene setting where it's like, it really feels like it needs to bring you along more. Mm. Whereas the original, it was just, it drops you in the beginning of the story, in the middle almost. Just like the very first scene.
Have we de-chend ourselves?
Yeah. Okay. So now we can get into it. And Devinder, I know you watched the original too. Did you also feel like this was a little more stately in its base than the first one?
I mean, here's the thing. So I watched some of the original when it first aired. It fell off a truck, you know?
Sure.
And back then, I gave up on it because it felt a little too bleak. Like, it just wasn't compelling enough for me to keep going. Even though I know so many people loved it, I tried rewatching that the UK pilot, too. And it's striking how different they are, you know? And on a certain level, I almost think I kind of prefer this one just because I like these characters. I really like, you know, the main group of folks, especially Desmond Borges from You're the Worst. He is just perfect for being in a conspiracy thriller, drawing thread on the wall, connecting the dots to everything. Like, he is great for a thriller like this. Mm-hmm. And I love Sasha Lane in the show. And I think she brings a really great fierceness and energy to it. Like, I was reminded of why I loved her so much in American Honey, and how much of a discovery she was in that movie. So I'm surprised you guys find it sluggish, just because what I find sluggish is shows like The Boys and so much of the stuff on Netflix and like, Umbrella Academy, where it feels like they're stretching out the amount of story they have for 12 episodes, but it doesn't feel like we're actually getting it anywhere, even though people are doing a lot of things, you know, and there's explosions and actions happening. I don't feel like anything is moving. Whereas this show, I felt like a certain momentum towards the end, certainly by the end of the second episode too, like once things kind of fell into place. And this is a show where people just die in a way that you don't quite predict. And I liked how unpredictable it was at times, even though you could tell who the big bad really is, like from the very first episode, probably. But it surprised me in a way that narratives today, especially like the streaming stuff where they're just either relentlessly, I don't know, just trying to prove how much they can push your buttons, or just trying to spread out very little plot, like not enough plot for too long. I didn't quite feel that here, but I do think if anybody reaches the end, I can certainly, I can understand if you're disappointed having watched the whole thing. If you're asking for actual answers, this show doesn't even get there by the end, unfortunately.
I totally agree with you that The Boys is spectacle, and you're right. Yeah. Like, how much story progress has there been? Very, very little, but I would say The Boys is not the that what you come into that show for. I think by the second episode of watching The Boys, you know that you're just here for bing, bang, boom, fireworks. I found that some of the changes they made, I liked. Some of them I didn't like. One of the smart ones, it was the method of the disease and how they changed it for the new one. Like in the first one, the disease was just like, well, we're going to kill a whole bunch of people. And because, you know, the modern James Bond supervillain plot is we have to depopulate the earth. I am doing it because I am actually the hero of this piece, not the villain. And I'm going to kill, you know, three quarters of the earth's population or whatever.
Sure.
In the new one, it's just they figured out that they don't need to kill people. They're just going to have like this multi-generational sterilization pill that people take through methods.
It's interesting too, because it's like when you first meet John Cusack's character, by the way, I do feel like this is one of his best roles in a very, very long time. Cause whenever you see his name, it's like, you know, a direct to DVD or video on demand movie, right? Where he's just paying off his increasing tax debt, I assume. there's nothing like he's never really had a personality or presence. I think since, what was it? That great movie,
2012.
Grand Piano. Well, 2012, but also Grand Piano. Have you guys seen Grand Piano?
No.
That is the one written by Damien Chazelle. It's the thriller where Elijah Wood, I believe, has to play a piano piece perfectly, or his wife, I believe, or he gets shot in the head. It is a great, great thriller. But anyway, Cusack is phenomenal in that. I really like him here, and him as a sort of basically an eco-terrorist, driven all the way, and also with the trappings of like the super, super, you know, liberal scientific elite, the guy with the, you know, adopted kids. His family's a rainbow. It seems so perfect in a way, right? And I think it's funny how it kind of leans on some of those trappings as sort of like, oh, no, this is bad. He is the bad guy here in an interesting way.
Yeah, he's sort of like the Jamba Juice manager that becomes evil.
Yes.
It didn't really chill me, that performance, but I understand the casting there. I wish like there was a moment where I was like, oh, John Cusack went weird. I thought he was fine in that role.
His freaky plastic face son. That's the weird chilling performance.
Yes. Because, man. His Jared Kushner.
Corey Michael Smith is really good.
Yeah.
Sarah, I know you agree with me that we as a culture are overdue for an assassin whose evil is portrayed through his compulsive consumption of raisins.
Oh my God! Yes, what an elegant shorthand! I immediately knew this was a bad guy.
Yeah, that is one detail that carried over from the original, and I was happy to see it.
Because anybody who loves raisins is just evil, right? I mean, come on.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad we are all on the same page.
Yeah.
Oh.
The balance of raisin power.
I'm learning a lot about myself today. One thing I wish they kept from the original, I felt like it really, for me, gave it a flavor all its own, was the music. I really did miss the music from the original. You know, not that they're beholden to do anything that the original did, obviously, but I thought it was put everything like off kilter right away in a way that felt so right to me. It was weird that in moments they do use the whatever you call it, you know, the music, but not the instrumentation, the composition.
Yes.
But it's all just sort of very generic. I actually went and bought the soundtrack to the original one. I liked it so much. But little note.
The original had that great vibe of just being this dirty thing you found, you know, in the video store and nobody has seen it, right? And it's like, hey, watch this thing, people. And it is the early Black Mirror thing, too, of where it was really hard to get. So the people who were able to get it was sort of like illicit and dangerous in a way. And I mean, that I think even between the seasons, like that show had a weird, there's a lot of controversy around it in the UK too. So I'm surprised it was remade. And certainly now, like a show about a global pandemic being the actual, evil plan. And also the thing that really shocked me is that, the vector of delivering the pandemic is through a vaccine. And a part of me is wondering, like, guys, should we even do this now in pop culture? Because we need people to take our back, like when we have a vaccine.
Yeah.
We need people to take it. This is dangerous almost to pretend like it could be a terrible, conspiracy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Admittedly, mm-hmm. The people who think COVID is a hoax are probably going to think that regardless of whether a TV show on Amazon that arrives 6 months into the pandemic seems to support their theory, but still, hey, thanks, Amazon.
I don't know. I mean, if you have people that think a virus can be transmitted by cell towers, I mean, what are you going to do to convince them otherwise? There's no hope there. Just have your show, enjoy it, enjoy your Bond supervillain delivery system.
It's just, I started to feel worried because I feel like this show did a good job of tapping the like lizard brain part of me that is sort of like, oh, conspiracies can be fun and interesting. And it's sort of like knowing when to turn that off and when to not make it entertainment versus making it, a driving force of your life philosophy. I'm not sure how folks can handle that. So that's the only thing.
Yeah.
But I was also shocked that Amazon went ahead and kept this show, actually aired it despite all these things that seem like it could be a bad thing for them. When it comes to public image and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, but they did have that disclaimer at the beginning of every episode where it's like, this is not about anything because like between, the very active conspiracy that is currently, online and promulgating its theories, every day in more and more complexity. Like it just seems like it would be very easy for them to absorb this one into it and say that this is just proof of it, which is, kind of what the story of the show is about, too, where it's like, and there's even a scene where, Wilson and Becky are like trying to research something in the book. And then he just stops and is like, it's kind of fun to be in the conspiracy. And it's like, is it? She's like, our friend is dead. She's like right over there. It's like there were times when I felt like the show wasn't sure how it felt about itself the story. Like there were tone issues, I thought, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we think it would have how do we think it would have been different if Fincher had stayed on it?
Oh my God. Ooh. I couldn't get that out of my brain because I do feel like a lot of the show just feels like it is not quite trying to be Fincher, but it feels like indistinct and just kind of sloppily directed at times. Like there's the Wilson torture sequence, which I think is a harrowing thing and certainly really inventive and interesting. And just like the torture techniques, I found that kind of interesting to watch. But had Fincher done it or had somebody with a more specific and I don't know, like engaging directorial style, I feel like it would have been an even better sequence. And I felt that all the way throughout the entire show. It's like there are certain bits where there's action, there's, Jessica Hyde doing her action-y bits, and it's badly choreographed or badly edited or badly shot. And I just wanted a little more. It would have elevated the show. It would have made the messiness kind of more bearable to watch.
Yeah. Mm,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, Dave said earlier, like, the original had so much more style. It had and I don't think that Fincher's style would have been the same as this, but just like this through the Mindhunter lens would have been so much more compelling, I think.
Yeah, I think it just would have had a little bit more. He has a dark wit that I don't think Gillian Flynn has as much, and I think that helps with tonal consistency and helps with pacing.
Yeah,
at least in for comparison, something like Zodiac, which is a really long, sprawling, like not particularly tight on its face, 2 hours and 40 minutes, but you don't feel it in your ass.
Yeah.
And this you feel like there's something a little more self-serious about this than I think the equivalent Fincher version. So it's kind of too bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think if anything, the show proves like what a great team they are together, because Gillian Flynn's writing and just her sensibility can be so dark and specific, and Fincher, that's where Fincher lives, and he knows how to harness that and control that, and this feels kind of unrestrained in a way. But I'm glad this show exists, because I think Gillian Flynn's one of the most interesting writers around right now. I love Sharp Objects. It's a show which she show ran that and didn't, like, I don't feel like there was much discussion about that show compared to something like True Detective, whereas that was literally, you know, the follow-up in a way that True Detective should have been, or mm-hmm. that people were waiting for after that. So I want to see her do more stuff. She co-wrote Widows, which I think is another perfect movie, also criminally underpraised. I believe locked out of the Oscars and everything. Like, I love seeing her work, and I'm glad she's trying different things. So that's exciting, at least.
It is time to go around the dial. First up is with Tara.
I have two recommendations for people who may live with tween and teen girls, or just have tween and teen girl sensibilities their own selves. These might also be of interest to tween and teen boys, but tween and teen boys are none of my business.
They're gross.
First up, Enola Holmes, which is a movie on Netflix, which we watched this weekend. Sherlock and Mycroft Holmes in this, it's based on a book. And Sherlock and Mycroft have a much younger sister. Her name is Enola, played by Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. She's been raised by their mother, Eudoria, played by Helena Bonham Carter, since the death of their father. And Eudoria has trained her in all kinds of very useful things, ciphering, science, botany, hand-to-hand combat, etc. Enola wakes up on her 16th birthday and discovers that her mother is gone. So she sends for her brothers to come home. Apparently it's been so long since she has seen them that when she sees them at the train station, they don't recognize her. And this is also when we learn that Eudoria has been writing to Mycroft for money for all kinds of improvements to the estate and for Enola's care that she has not at all been spending that money on. What has she been spending the money on? That's part of the mystery. Officially, Enola is Mycroft's ward. He wants to send her to finishing school, but she is not about that life, so she runs away. And the adventure that she has on the run while deciphering the clues that Eudoria has left in her handmade birthday gift are what the movie is about. The cast is great. Henry Cavill plays Sherlock. He is the beefiest Sherlock Holmes you will ever see. Sure. Sam Claflin, from The Hunger Games, among many other things, is Mycroft. Fiona Shaw is very good as the evil headmistress of the finishing school.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is in it? I said Helena Bonham Carter. Who am I forgetting? Oh, Bern Gorman, the evil creep. When you see his face, you'll be like, oh, that evil creep.
That guy, every time. Yeah,
He actually looks like Anne Kriga a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alice Krieger. He's a guy who's chasing after someone that Enola meets by chance on a train.
He's like if Prince Charles and Alfred E. Newman were combined in evil.
Yes.
Yes, and had fallen into a vat of acid at some point, but recovered and lived.
It didn't eat very much.
Yes. It's so cute. I had no expectations of it. It has some, like, cutesy elements. There's, like, Enola does direct address to the camera where she narrates the whole story, and she also, like, talks directly to the
Can I be honest? The only time this ever worked for me was Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Okay.
I really, usually I when I see that, I recoil. Like, don't talk to me.
It's not great.
It's too personal.
Yeah, the narration is fine. I don't need her to, like, look directly at the camera and talk to me. Mm. But other than that, it was so sweet. She's you know, it's all about her being, like, smart and resourceful. And there's a great... there's no way to talk about the mother's storyline without kind of spoiling it. But it's really good. And I think...
revolves around the... suffragette movement.
Yes. There's a political element to it as well. And so it's about her, you know, having learned all of the right things to be able to solve this mystery and survive on her own. And she also, like, she meets the boy who's on the run for other political reasons that are related. And he has less useful skills from his education. And so she has to help him because otherwise he will not survive. So it's even if you're teen or tween girls are not about the romance yet. There's very little of that. It's just about her being smart and capable.
Also in like, you know, the cycle of pop culture, it's sort of nice to see a Sherlock Holmes adjacent product where mm-hmm. Sherlock Holmes just gets to be this guy and he doesn't have to punch people in x-ray vision yeah. or have computer overlays all the time. But both of those were like cute mm-hmm. in their own way in their sure. own time. But I feel like, you know, we're just ready for a Sherlock Holmes that says, oh, yeah, the fingerprints and the cat did the meow and the ceiling is, of course, dripping with the thing. And therefore, Mr. Y is the murderer. Like, that's nice mm-hmm. once in a while. You know?
Yeah, he has a mystery to solve, sort of, but he's yeah. like very much sidelined and she outsmarts him on a lot of occasions, which is great. So it's really cute. Yeah. The other is also on Netflix. It is a series called Julie and the Phantoms. So in 1995, a pop band...
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Does this involve slamming evil?
Julie and the Phantoms?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Not interested.
All right. Be quiet then. In 1995, a pop band called Sunset Curve is about to play the gig that they think might break them. But first, they go out back at the venue to get some street dogs. Cut to the present day where a girl named Julie is in a special music program at school but is too shy to play in class. And over the course of the first episode, we find out her mother has died not very long ago. Her mother was a musician too. And Julie is cleaning out the garage that used to be her mother's studio when she finds a Sunset Curve CD and puts it on to play it, which is when the three guys appear in front of her because the hot dogs killed them with food poisoning. Now they're ghosts. The reason they are there is that this used to be their studio too. As the series goes on, it's, you know, it's typical ghost story. She's the only one who can see them, except when all of them play together and then other people can see them too. So she comes up with a story where, you know, they're a band in Sweden and they're holograms. And because this is a show for children, no one really interrogates them this very much, yeah. which, you know.
This sounds like Beetlejuice with music, which sounds kind of fun.
It yeah. kind of is. That's a very good analogy. So. You know, it touches on Julie's grief and trauma, takes it seriously, but doesn't get too heavy with it. She has a best friend who she tells the truth and the friend believes her. And, you know, so that's very sweet. The songs are really good. Like, granted, I am a pop music of 1995 person, but still, like, they're good. The boys are cute. One of them is gay and he gets a love interest who is treated in a very matter-of-fact way. But if your tween, again, is of an age where she thinks any kind of romance is icky, there's no kissing. There's, like, I think a hug and it doesn't come until the finale. That's it. our friend Adam Grossworth, past and future guest of the show, was like, first of all, I hate how much I love this show. And second said, I can't believe this isn't on Disney Plus because it's very, like, High School Musical. It's in that lane.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of it is directed by Kenny Ortega, who has choreographed a lot of those shows and also choreographed Dirty Dancing and other stuff like that. So it's has a great pedigree. It's super cute. And I also have heard from our friend Pam and our friend Allison Lowe Huff, past and future guest of the show, that their daughters really, really liked it, too, and were charmed by it. So these are shows that are good for kids, and I liked them too, and I am not a kid. I'm just immature. For my plug, we have an event coming up on Sunday because October 4th is, in fact, the 30th anniversary of the premiere of Beverly Hills 90210.
Woo!
So the ATX Festival is presenting a discussion between Sarah DeBunting and me, which was conducted by our friend Linda Holmes. She talked to us about 90210 and about the book, but mostly just about the show, which was really fun. And before that, we're also having a watch party and a live tweet of season 3, episode 19, Back in the High Life Again, better known as I Hate You Both, Never Speak to Me Again.
Uh-huh.
If you are a fan of the show, you know that one very well. So unfortunately, we don't have details about that yet. So the easiest way to keep tabs on that is to follow ATX Festival on Twitter. They are twitter.com/ATX Festival. So more details will come out. Yes, Dave.
You should just say what ATX Festival is.
Sorry. The ATX Festival is a TV festival here in Austin, which I have been to and been a panelist on in the past. Sarah has been to it in the past too. It's super fun. It's basically TV camp for grownups. So we were very, very happy that our past guests, Emily and Caitlin, who founded the fest, were able to help us out and help promote the book this way. So yeah, follow them, ATX Festival on Twitter, for more details about that event, which is, as I said, this Sunday.
Okay, Devendra, what do you have?
I guess for the last few weeks, I've been catching up on The Legend of Korra, or I guess rewatching it, actually, because first of all, this show just hit Netflix. You know, it aired at Nickelodeon in the early 2010s, I think starting in 2012. This is the sequel series to Avatar: The Last Airbender. And I was just reminded of how much I freaking love this show. It is a fantastic follow-up to Airbender. It is more of a teen show. It's more mature. It's not... Airbender feels like, you know, I love that series so much. But it's also something that's kind of built to be for kids and appreciated by kids. And anybody can enjoy it. But it's almost limited in a way because it was on Nickelodeon and what they were trying to do. Korra was an attempt to look at that world, I think, 100 years or so, quite a bit into the future where industrialization has begun. You know, a more modern society has kind of started to form. And yeah, the story itself is very much more of a mature teen thing. It's almost like Buffy in a way, which I really appreciate because it ends up revolving around a new avatar, but also a core group of friends. And they got to go solve mysteries and fight big bads and all that fun stuff. As always, like what I love about this universe is just how what the creators have built up since Last Airbender. So it's still, you know, following up with, it's still focused on like, it's a world where people have elemental superpowers and that kind of, fits into the way they fight and so many other things. But this show is interesting too, because it sort of, it shows how those powers, things like fire bending and air bending and whatnot, could be used in a modern way. We see power plants powered by firebenders, because it can also control electricity. I guess that's the way it works. I love it so much, mainly because the main character, Korra, is a really interesting avatar. She's the rare person born, I guess, once in a generation who has all the elemental powers. And she historically, like, they're the person who kind of unites the world and all these people. I have been talking about this show quite a bit we brought back the Republic City Dispatch podcast, which is something I did with Matt Patches, Joanna Robinson, and Dave Gonzalez when the show was airing. So it was also really fun to be able to go back and, you know, bring that crew back, rewatch Korra on Netflix and see the conversation about it with a whole new group of fans. It's sort of weird to, like, yeah, be podcasting long enough where eight years later, you could come back and see a whole new generation take a show for the first time, which is, it feels weird and makes me feel old. But it's nice to be reminded of why a show like Korra is so very good. It's on Netflix right now, so be sure to check it out and watch Airbender if you haven't yet.
Are you looking forward to the live-action original Airbender?
Complicated feelings, just because the news broke a couple weeks ago that the original creators are not going to be involved with it.
Yeah.
I don't want to see this again. It almost seems like live-action is cursed for the Avatar universe.
Right.
Let me tell you guys, like, I reviewing the Last Airbender movie, the Shyamalan one, that was one of the first movies I went to for a press screening in New York when I moved there in 2009. And I had to interview M. Night Shyamalan the next day and sit in the room with that guy and talk with him as he sort of, like, after watching him destroy one of my most favorite franchises, like, absolutely eviscerate it. One of the worst movies I've ever seen. And I sit down with him, and he's just a very nice guy. I'm like, damn it. Okay. You made a bad movie, but you seem nice. And I don't know. You have good intentions. It's a whole thing. I'm not looking forward to that Netflix thing. TLDR, basically.
Fair. And what do you have to plug?
What should you guys check out? Well, check me out on the Slash Filmcast at slashfilm.com. And I also do the Engadget podcast. Just Google that. We talk about tech and all sorts of fun stuff. But occasionally we talk about like new media and streaming media and stuff there too. So that's probably relevant to this audience.
Sarah D. Bunting.
That's you. Keeping it light as usual. I'm here to talk about the latest installment of 30 for 30, the life and trials of Oscar Pistorius, AKA the Blade Runner. It is a 4-part series. Each part is almost feature film length. It is only on ESPN Plus at the moment. So for one David T. Cole, that is an automatic strike against it. And I'm a little unclear, like, this is really good. Like, talk about TLDR, like, you guys should watch it. It is a well-made sort of biographical property. It's well-made on the crime tip. It's good. I'm not sure why they're putting it behind this paywall right now, except that ESPN is like, whatever, 2020 is weird, and there's like 15 postseasons happening right now, and football, so... this was the decision taken. Not sure I agree. Anyway, I think it is going for a OJ Made in America kind of take on Oscar Pistorius as sort of like a metaphor for a lot of things, or a sort of fulcrum for a lot of things. It's not just in the length of each episode, but it's... sometimes, like, it seems a little painstaking and you're like, why are we backing up this far? But I do think it's going for a broader, like, this is how we got here, contextualizing of Pistorius, of his career, of athletics in South Africa, particularly like post-apartheid and for white people. The fact that his family, at least in the early going, is participating a little more than Reeva Steenkamp's, of course. You know, this is the crux of why we're here, is that he does admit to shooting and killing her. His girlfriend at the time, he says it was an accident. Sentencing developments would seem to indicate that the criminal justice system did not agree with him. But as you're watching, you know, yes, it can be a bit deliberate. Yes, you're not sure whose side the film is actually on, but in between episodes, my husband and I were definitely discussing the fact that, this is a different perspective. This is, extremely well researched. It's more nuanced than most accounts, and certainly print accounts of the case would suggest. My husband is into track and field in a big way. I know zero about it, so this has been an education, and I think he's glad to be able to give me context sort of while we're watching. We'll see how we feel about it when we get to the end of it. We're halfway through right now, but so far it's really good. And if you don't subscribe to ESPN Plus, join a large club. But this might be worth it, especially at this time of year when, like I said, all of a sudden it's like 25 hours a day of crucial sports ball. So give it a look. I assume it will come to the broadcast channels eventually. And when it does, you can have a search set for it on your DVR, The Life and Trials of Oscar Pistorius. It's very good. For my plug, you can read about my reviews of this and many other true crime properties on the newsletter that I write each weekday with Eve Beatty. It's called Best Evidence, and you can find it at bestevidence.fyi. As well, you may have heard, we have a book. It's called The Very Special 90210 Book. Not everything that we wrote made it into the book, but you can hear all those cut scenes on the AWT 90210 feed Thursdays as we're going forward. So listen out for those.
All right, finally, we're going to talk Cobra Kai.
Yeah!
This wasn't a bit. I thought briefly, like, should I just do it for a few more weeks to pretend I don't have time? But no. So obviously, anybody who wants to watch Cobra Kai probably has watched it by now. It was on YouTube. It was in the YouTube jail. There's no way that if something was in YouTube.
That service doesn't exist, by the way. YouTube. It was one of the pro YouTube things. It's just like, how do you get it? What? Nobody watches any of that stuff. Come on.
Yeah, stick to your lane. You know, your user-created videos, and you do a perfect job of that.
Before you get into it, I have to give a shout out to our past guest, Malcolm Venable, because I don't know if I would have been as into checking this out if I hadn't seen his tweet where he said, oh, I get it. Cobra Kai is glow for straight guys. I was like, oh, okay, now I'm interested. So thank you, Malcolm.
Yeah. I could hear your ears pricking up from here. It was amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, watching videos on YouTube, never mind like it being actual piece of entertainment, but like there is a generational divide here where I'm like, if it's on YouTube, it takes a lot for me to want to watch something on YouTube. There's nothing that annoys me more on the internet when it's like, check out da-da-da-da-da-da and how to, I don't know, like hammer a nail into the wall. And like, all right, right, I mean, let's find out what I need. Hammer nails, maybe? Double check. 13-minute video, hammers, nails. Like, oh just God, tell me. Yes. Just put it in text. So oh, my God.
Write it out.
Cobra Kai has the most unbelievably believable follow-up to something. It is mm-hmm. a universe that shouldn't exist, but within that universe, everything seems to be very well considered and makes sense.
Yeah.
And that is this. There is a part of California somewhere near LA that the whole town just revolves around karate and past karate deeds. And
this is what I grew up learning. So yes, that must be true. Yes.
There is a, you know, the center of the universe is this old Cobra Kai dojo and Mr. Miyagi's dojo of one, I guess, back in the day. And everything to do with this town, including town politics, tax rates, who lives where, the restaurants that are on the main drag, it all somehow ties back to these dojos. And it sounds ridiculous, but then like everything sort of like feels right after you accept the fact that this town is Karate Town. Mm-hmm. Johnny, who you remember as the young villain from The Karate Kid, is now sort of, you know, a 40, late 40s-ish, mid-40s-ish, down on his luck guy that never really got out of high school. His brain is still in the 80s. He still calls everybody pussy. He's still like, he's that guy, right?
He drives the same car. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a car unless it's something like an IROC or a Trans Am. He's that guy, right? Yeah,
he's the 80s guy.
And then Daniel, who it was Ralph Macchio's The Karate Kid, is now a car salesman. He owns like, you know, three or four car dealerships. It's like the absolute perfect setup. Like, I know everything I need to know about these characters within yeah. like 5 minutes of watching this show. And the fact that like Daniel isn't like the new Mr. Miyagi, like he isn't all zenned out and whatever. He's got like the wife, the two kids. He's got the not one iota of personality home. He's got the car dealerships. Like, he is the perfect nobody now. And everything about this show rings so true, but is so ridiculous at the same time. I love it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. It shouldn't exist, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it feels like a perfect reboot in a way. We've seen so many old shows and series brought back, and they don't know how to recapture that magic, mm-hmm. whereas this, like, builds on the magic in a really organic way.
The brilliance of this show is that it makes Daniel the villain in a way where he is totally, like, if you said it to him, he would not understand. Mm-hmm. But like, mm-hmm. Johnny is trying to rebuild his life in a way where he's like still kind of a shitty person, yeah. but he's just trying to, like, he wants to start a new dojo. Yeah. And Daniel is still like hung up on this shit from like, cause it's Karate Town. He's also still hung up on shit from when he was 14.
Well, not only hung up on a shit, but all his marketing for his car dealerships are like, yes. we kick, yeah. you know, the prices of the
yeah,
other guys,
yeah, yeah.
whatever.
So,
forget it, folks. It's Karate Town. Yeah. yeah.
Right.
Oh God.
So Johnny has to like go to, you know, ask for like, he has to go to like the, you know, the zoning board or whatever the fuck and like yeah. get permission to do this or that. And like Daniel is already on whatever.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the meeting is, whatever. He has to go and like get a suit and go down there. And Daniel is already like on this board and he's like trying to block it for really no reason except spite. Yep. Like, it's just like shit like that where it's like, he's just a guy. Like, Daniel, what is your problem? Like, you're the success. Get over it. But like, it's.
I would say in Daniel's defense, like he the first scene in Cobra Kai or one of the early scenes is where he meets up, you know, with Cobra Kai guy and mm-hmm. Daniel's trying to be nice to him.
Yeah.
In a way, I don't know if it's like genuine or if it's
just at the dealership.
Him, like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At the dealership. And I sort of feel like he feels slighted from that. He's like, oh. That was sort of the moment where it's like, okay, it's
sure.
on. we are having a sequel fight now, except it's an adult world of, you know, land deals and whatnot.
Yes. But also the other thing that the show does so brilliantly is like it makes you buy the stakes of Karate Town.
Yes.
To the point where like when Johnny shows up at Daniel's house, they're like facing off like they're about to have a fight on Daniel's fucking patio. And then Daniel's wife comes out and is like, what are you doing? It's like, I'm not going to clean up your blood off my patio.
I wasn't born in Karate Town. I'm not a Karate Town woman.
Exactly.
I don't want to see a crane stance in this house.
She's like, and then she's like, just come in. Have you eaten? And Johnny's like, I could eat. And then he like comes in and has breakfast. Like, it's just like shit like that where it's like, it shouldn't work.
No.
And it works. Love it. It's amazing. Yeah. Anyway, that's Cobra Kai. It's really good.
It's really good. I will say, as somebody who I took karate for like 5 years when I was a kid because of the Karate Kid and all the wave of like, you know, kid martial arts movies. And I feel a deep connection to the show and everything it's doing. And I love that it is confronting bullying in a way that I think is really interesting right now, because it is sort of like a thing where in the 80s, like the villains were just jerks and assholes and everything. And I don't think really reckoned with what that means. And this is a whole like turning a guy who in the very first episode is still like a sexist, racist jerk.
Yeah.
And it finds sympathy for him, which I think is that's quite a feat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am enjoying it and I'm looking forward to the next season. And it's kind of surprising that it got off the ground. Like, it's one of those projects you look at it on paper, you're like, what? Mm-hmm. But it's like one of the genuine big surprises of this year for TV for me. And I'm so glad that YouTube stopped doing whatever the fuck they thought they were going to do.
Well, I guess we should thank YouTube for producing this. Like, here's the thing. I don't know if they brought the show to Netflix before or Hulu or wherever, right? Like, when they were trying to get it off the ground, I don't know who would have, like, taken the bait there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, in that one respect, even though all the YouTube original stuff is dead now, they're pursuing like original stuff with content creators.
Yeah.
It is interesting. Like, I don't think we're gonna get a success story like this from Quibi, right? Like, talk about big money gone to like creative ideas. And I think a lot of people in Hollywood just went to Quibi because like they're throwing money on the ground for absolutely whatever idea you have, right? So I don't blame people for like trying to jump on that. It's really cool that this thing emerged from YouTube's overinvestment in original content. Yeah.
One other thing before you move on from this, that something that they could have really skimped on a show like this is like the staging of the actual fight scenes. And they don't. The fight scenes are choreographed really well, I thought.
Yeah, it's good. I will say, now that DaVinci's brought it up, let's just give all tech companies of medium to large size permission not to have to do original television programming.
You leave it up to like Jeffrey Katzenberg, though, like a guy who knows the business, and then he comes out with something like Quibi. I just feel like there is everyone's racing to be the king of like mobile video or something right now. Yeah. And it's I don't know if it's worth it, but hey, show creators, get your money. I do not blame you. Do whatever
that's what
you need
it is
to do.
Basically, yeah. This time will be remembered as a gold rush for all the creators that could never get in otherwise. This is their chance to, you know, make a sale, and God bless them, and God bless tech companies for doing it. On the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show this week, it is the second of three playoff rounds. Next week will be the final playoff round.
Oh boy.
And then after that, the championships of season one. Very exciting. And then after that, we're gonna have a couple of special episodes on deck. We've already recorded the Extra Hot Great crossover episode.
Woo!
With Tara Sarah and Mark Blankenship. We're also gonna have a Halloween episode.
Exciting. Spooky.
We're also gonna do a Marvel special episode before we get into season two proper. And season two's locked in. Not going to talk about it yet, but it's very exciting what we're going to be doing with season two. So look forward to that. All right. Elsewhere in the Extra Hot Great universe, on the next Extra, Extra Hot Great, we are doing a show called When a Show Finds Itself. It is the episode in which a show really feels like what the show is to us present day. So that is available to all our supporters at any level. Go to patreon.com/extrahotgreat to sign up. And then right here on the next EHG Prime, it is the Showtime documentary series, The Comedy Store, with our new guest, Brandy Brown. It is time for The Canon. We have another user's mission this week. Let's get to it.
Hey, Extra Hot Great. This is Winnie coming to you with my first Canon submission. I thought, you know what? I've got some extra time on my hands all of a sudden, so why not go for it? This last few weeks, you guys, my TV viewing has been put through a new filter, a corona lens where the actions of TV characters are triggering my self-distancing alarms. People are going to parties and they're shaking hands and everyone's hanging out at their local dive bar and generally getting to enjoy the presence of other human beings. It's all I notice anymore. And this past Saturday, I rewatched an episode of TV that this isolating experience has made me appreciate on a new level. It's a show about isolation, a fear of intimacy, loneliness, economic stress, and mental health. I am submitting for your approval into the canon, Season 1, Episode 0 of Mr. Robot, entitled Hello Friend. Or if we want to get technical, EPS1.0HelloFriend.mov. Mr. Robot episode titles were formatted this way because our main character, Elliot, is a hacker. Here, Elliot introduces himself to us, the audience. Clip one here.
Hello, friend. Hello, friend. That's lame. Maybe I should give you a name. But that's a slippery slope. You're only in my head. We have to remember that. Shit. This actually happened. I'm talking to an imaginary person. What I'm about to tell you is top secret. A conspiracy bigger than all of us. There's a powerful group of people out there that are secretly running the world. I'm talking about the guys no one knows about, the guys that are invisible. The top 1% of the top 1%, the guys that play God without permission. And now I think they're following me.
So yeah, it sounds like Elliot may be dealing with some stuff. Cut to Elliot on the subway watching two men in suits who seem to be watching him. Or are they just creeped out by his sideways glances? These glances, by the way, come courtesy of Oscar winner Rami Malek, who, if you haven't noticed, has some distinctive eyes, and he uses them to great effect, looking out from a black hoodie that seems to be swiped right out from a hacker stock photo. Elliot thinks he's being followed because of a meeting he had the previous night with the owner of Ron's Coffee, a shop with incredible free internet that Elliot enjoys using. But it's a little too incredible. Clip to here.
You're Ron. But your real name's Rohit Mehta. You changed it to Ron when you bought your first Ron's Coffee shop 6 years ago. Now you got 17 of them, with 8 more coming next quarter.
May I help you with something?
I like coming here, because your Wi-Fi was fast. I mean, you're one of the few spots that has a fiber connection with gigabit speed. It's good. It's so good, it scratched that part of my mind, part that doesn't allow good to exist without condition. So I started intercepting all the traffic on your network. That's when I noticed something strange. That's when I decided to hack you. I know you run a website called Plato's Boys.
Pardon me?
You're using Tor networking to keep the servers anonymous. You made it really hard for anyone to see it, but I saw it. The onion routing protocol, it's not as anonymous as you think it is. Whoever's in control of the exit nodes is also in control of the traffic, which makes me the one in control.
I must ask you to kindly leave.
I own everything. All your emails, all your files, all your pics.
Get out of here right now, or I'll call the
police. You want them to find out about the 100 terabytes of child pornography you served to your 400,000 users? Personally, man, I was hoping it was just gonna be some BDSM stuff. You realize how much simpler that would have been?
I did not hurt anyone. I never did. That's my personal life.
Here we learn that Elliot can't let himself trust a good thing, and that he always expects the worst from people. It's one of the reasons he hacks, but he's also desperate for connection. So desperate, in fact, that he chooses to open up to this child pornographer. Clip three here.
I understand what it's like to be different. I'm very different, too. I mean, I don't jerk off to little kids, but I don't know how to talk to people. My dad was the only one I could talk to. But he died.
Despite Elliot's open moment with Roy Hood, things will not end well for the shop owner. Elliot has already made an anonymous tip before their meeting and slips out just as the police arrive. Back to Elliot's subway ride where he sees a man, played by Christian Slater, yelling to get someone's attention, possibly his, but Elliot ignores him and heads into work at Allsafe, where he's a cybersecurity engineer, a job his childhood friend Angela got him. When asked why he wasn't at Angela's birthday party the previous night, we get a flashback of Elliot attempting to attend, but ducking out when he sees Angela and her happy friends inside. It's obvious that he wants to join, but instead he'll go to Ron's coffee. Ugh, poor sad Elliot. But excellent work social distancing. At Allsafe, we also learn that Elliot hates Angela's boyfriend, that he hates to be touched. You guys, please, at least 6 feet. And that he hates their main client, E-Corp, a mega conglomerate whose name Elliot hears as Evil Corp. Elliot also sees a court-mandated psychologist, Krista, who he also hacks. But Elliot likes Krista and finds in his research that she is lonely just like him. This is the other reason Elliot hacks, to get close to people, even if they aren't knowingly participating. Here, Krista wants Elliot to talk about his deep anger towards society. Clip 4 here.
What is it about society that disappoints you so much?
Oh, I don't know. Is it that we collectively thought Steve Jobs was a great man, even when we knew he made billions off the backs of children? Or maybe it's that it feels like all our heroes are counterfeit. The world itself's just one big hoax. Spamming each other with our burning commentary of bullshit, masquerading as insight, our social media faking as intimacy. Or is it that we voted for this? Not with our rigged elections, but with our things, our property, our money. I'm not saying anything new. We all know why we do this, not because Hunger Games books makes us happy, but because we want to be sedated. Because it's painful not to pretend, because we're cowards. Fuck society.
Elliot, you're not saying anything. What's wrong?
Nothing.
Despite his anger, Elliot dreams of saving our society. He wants to save us from the top 1% of the 1%. But he knows that he could never do that because he's not special. He's anonymous and alone. Back at Elliot's apartment, we learn how lonely he really is. Curled up crying on the floor, a regular occurrence, without family to rely on, it's insinuated that his mother was abusive. Elliot turns to morphine, followed by Narcan, both of which his cute neighbor Shayla deals him. By the way, never make decisions on morphine. Elliot heads out to do some hacking reconnaissance, and after once again spotting men in suits looking at him, and once again seeing the mystery man from the train, he gets called into Allsafe by Angela. It's 3 a.m. and Evil Corp is getting hit by a DDoS attack, which is, you guys, I don't actually know. It's like computer stuff. You know, Mr. Robot actually gets a lot of praise for its realistic depiction of hacking and general computer stuff. They don't use like a blooping animations and two people are never typing on the same keyboard at the same time. They use real code like actual computer stuff. Maybe Lloyd, Elliot and Angela's coworker, can explain what's happening here. Clip 5 here.
I don't think this is just a DDoS attack. I think they got a rootkit sitting inside the servers.
What's a rootkit?
It's like a crazy serial rapist with a very big dick.
Jesus, Lloyd.
The rootkit can only be stopped by taking a private jet to Evil Corp's server farm in Dallas, taking the servers down and fixing the issue there. Once again, that probably has to be done in real life to get big-time computer stuff done. After the reboot, Elliot takes a look at the infected server to find that the hackers have left behind a marker, F-Society, along with a request to leave their rootkit behind. Elliot can't bring himself to delete it and hides it instead where only he can access it. Back in New York, as Elliot rides home on the subway, he is once again met by the mysterious Christian Slater. Hey, what's the patch on his jacket say anyway? Oh, it says Mr. Robot. So Christian Slater is the titular Mr. Robot. That's weird. I kind of assumed Elliot was going to end up being Mr. Robot. Whatever. Mr. Robot wants Elliot to come with him, but only if he didn't delete this morning's rootkit. Intrigued, Elliot follows. Clip 6 here.
You've been following me. Why? What do you want from me?
My dad was a petty thief. Never could hold down a job, so he just robbed. Convenience stores, shops, small-time stuff. One time he sat me down, he told me something I never forgot. He said, everyone steals. That's how it works. You think people out there are getting exactly what they deserve? No. They're getting paid over or under. But someone in the chain always gets bamboozled. I steal, son. But I don't get caught. That's my contract with society. Now, if you can catch me stealing, then I'll go to jail. But if you can't, then I've earned the money. I respected that, man. I thought that shit was cool. As a little kid. A few years after that, they finally caught him. Send him to jail. Dies 5 years later. My respect goes with him. I thought he was free doing what he did, but he wasn't. He was in prison. Just like you are now, Elliot. I'm gonna break you out.
Mr. Robot takes Elliot to F Society, an abandoned arcade in Coney Island where Mr. Robot and his hacker team work, and he would like Elliot to join them. The cyber attack this morning was a test that Elliot passed when he decided to not delete their rootkit. On his way home, Elliot, knowing his struggles with mental health, has doubts about his meeting with Mr. Robot. Clip 7 here.
I'm crazy. I have to be crazy because that didn't just happen, right? This is a delusion. Is this a delusion? Shit, I'm a schizo. Have I really lost it this time? No. Last night happened. It was real. Angela called me. I was at AllSafe. Evil Corp servers were compromised. Those are facts, not delusions. I know. I realize I'm saying all of this to an imaginary person. But I created you. I didn't create this.
Elliot will eventually return to F Society and meet Darlene, a hacker whose closet I want to raid. And she's also a hacker who's pissed that Elliot has yet to do something that's computer-related that will allow her to do some computer stuff. This interaction confuses Elliot, and Darlene leaves annoyed just as Mr. Robot arrives. The two of them hop on a Ferris wheel, and that's where we learn about the project that F Society has been working on. They want to hack Evil Corp and wipe out all consumer debt owed to them. It would be the single largest event of wealth redistribution in history. But first, they'll need Elliot's help framing Evil Corp's chief technology officer, Terry Colby. As Elliot ponders whether he could even do such a thing, Neil Diamond's If You Go Away plays. It's an unexpected and delightful music choice, as Mr. Robot's licensed music often was. It's the first look of hope we've seen on Elliot's face, and he's been asked to change the world by joining a society where he won't be the outsider and where he doesn't have to be alone. The next morning, AllSafe team meets with Evil Corp and the FBI to discuss the hack. And when Terry Colby talks down to Angela and gets her kicked out of the meeting, it's then that Elliot chooses to provide them with the false rootkit, framing Colby. A swap that Tyrell Wellick, Evil Corp's senior VP of technology, seems to notice. And then nothing happens. A few weeks go by with no news from the FBI, Mr. Robot, or the F Society. Angela also hasn't talked to Elliot during this time. She partly blames him for getting kicked out of the FBI meeting for mansplaining over her to Colby. but in a positive move, Elliot opts for real connection by reaching out to Angela and apologizing. He even hugs her. Just then, the news stations announce that Terry Kobe has been arrested by the FBI for his involvement in the Evil Corp server attack. Excited by this turn of events, Elliot takes to Times Square to see evidence on Jumbotrons all around him that the plan he set in motion with F Society was in fact real. But Elliot's celebration is cut short when he's asked to step into a black SUV by a bunch of men in suits, who then take him to a room filled with men in suits. Sitting in the center is Tyrell Wellick. Clip 8 here.
Bonsoir, Elliot.
Please tell me you're seeing this too.
So that's it. I know there are probably better episodes of Mr. Robot in its 4 seasons, although I would argue that there are multiple episodes of the show that are canon-worthy. I just can't think of another pilot that got me into its main character's mindset so immediately and got me so fully invested in his well-being. I really care what happens to Elliot. I love this show, and I often ask people who haven't watched it to at least give the first episode a shot. So will you, Extra Hot Great?
Thank you, Whitney. Devinder, you picked this from our list of submissions. Why don't you go first?
Yeah, I feel like I remember where I was when I saw this episode for the first time, and I was just kind of awestruck by it. It is just listening to that coffee shop scene, right? Which is happens within the first few minutes of it. It feels like Sam Esmail just like putting his foot down and putting his stamp on like what he wants the show to be. It's incredibly well written, and the character of Elliot is so fully realized. And what you don't get in the audio clip is just how Rami Malek plays this character, right? Because Rami, he's a guy, he's an actor, he's been around for a while. He was in Band of Brothers, I believe. He was in the not so great Spike Lee vampire movie. But he has these incredible set of eyes, and he uses his eyes so perfectly. And so like it feels like Mr. Robot is the perfect culmination of Rami Malek's like really interesting physical presence in Sam Esmail's writing. And just like, I love hacker stuff. I'm a tech guy. And what I really appreciate about the show too, also, you don't get this over the audio. They worked really hard to make sure everything you see on computer screens is real. So this is not just like CGified hacking or anything. This feel it like lends an air of authenticity to what Mr. Robot is doing. This isn't hackers. This isn't the net. This is like, you know, this is post Fight Club, somebody railing against society, but doing it in a very authentic way. And yeah, I'm not a, you know, crazy network engineer or anything, so I don't know most of what's happening, but I can know the authenticity when I feel it. I think back to like the last Jason Bourne movie, which had some terrible on-screen computer graphics and like some really dumb hacking tropes. And it just makes a clear difference. So yeah, I love so much about this show, how it's sort of like the pilot doesn't quite get to this, but I think the pilot alone is a great stand. Like it's a movie. I think Sam Esmail was even like toying with the idea as a movie at the beginning. There's a distinct like arc to this entire pilot, but it sets you up for where the show's going. It wasn't a fully perfect show, but it certainly did some, you know, insane things that we had never really seen on TV before. I just rewatched this episode actually too, and it's just like, it's so confident. It's so like the characters are so fully realized. Yeah, I love everything about it. It's the one thing I try to get many people to watch a show, but at the very least, I'm happy if they just watch the pilot because you kind of get the full Mr. Robot experience there.
Yep, I agree.
That is true. Sarah, you wrote about this for previously.tv. Why don't you go next?
I did. Yeah, I would write about the visuals and how like stuffed every frame was. I think I didn't end up finishing out this show, and it's been on my list to do because like there was enough time between seasons that it would just like,
yeah,
the Ouroboros of what was real and what was not consistently. Like I was like, now I have to start rewatching it from the beginning just to untangle who's on what side. But
I will say straight up, by the way, season 2 is not great. And they actually took a longer break between that and 3 and 4. And that is where the show kind of reset and got great. So,
right.
Yeah. Worth
and I remember
that.
Really liking season 3. you know, I also wrote a lot about how Rami Malek, who is a twin himself, is our friend John mm-hmm. Ramos's twin, basically. So he's John's like famous triplet, I guess. But his face is so like when he's following Christian Slater down that little narrow alley, the first time he's taken to F Society, and that like near pants soiling fear, but also like the joy that he's like, now, like, now I'm about to be part of a caper.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm special. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, he's just really, he's really good. And he's really good at being still sometimes. This pilot, I think, is really good. It sort of lets you know what you're in for, but doesn't let you know too much. And it's not too annoying, at least at this juncture, about like the puzzle that you're going to have to solve. It isn't trying to fake you out about New York stuff. It did screw one thing up with the subway, but at least they were actually in the subway.
The Q train. That's not where the Q train goes. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and Christian Slater's like, well, we're going to go into Brooklyn. I'm like, you're in Brooklyn. You're in Church Avenue. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. I also remember where I was sitting when I first saw this, and like the old couch, which I no longer have, that I was sitting on. And I remember like the cursing and the sort of darkness of it and how much drug use they were showing. And that Lloyd at one point is like, you know, they're finger blasting the entire network or something. And I was like, this is on USA.
It's like on. It's also like so anti-capitalist in a way that is surprising to see on a network like USA. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. which is part of like a much larger like Borg in 30 Rock. Yeah, it was really fun to go back to this. And it was also like trying to locate it in time was really weird. Like 2015 is like such a meaningless signifier to me now that it's like, I understand that that was 5 years ago. I know where I lived. I know how old I was, but it's just like another time that is almost unrecognizable based on the hieroglyphs we have. but yeah, this was really like a joy to revisit. It made me want to rewatch the whole series from the beginning again, which, as everyone knows, is one of my canon criteria. And I wish that we'd gotten a little more of the actual F Society tears, especially my president, Carly Chaikin. But
the queen. Yeah.
Yes, she's the best. But she doesn't do much in this, but she packs a lot into some very pointed glaring. And if you know what that relationship is, it's pretty interesting. So I'd also like to say that I think we might have I scoffed at the casting of Christian Slater in this, but having watched I keep calling it Dirty Betty, it's not called that, it's Dirty John, the Betty Broderick story, he was quite good in that. I think he really has gotten a lot better and a lot less Jack Nicholson-y in things, and you see that process happening in this. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. Great presentation, and thanks for having us revisit it. Who's next?
I'll go next. Speaking of Dirty John, the Betty Broderick story, someone please cast Amanda Peet and Carly Chaikin as like mother and daughter.
Yes.
Because they really have a similar kind of energy and vibe and look. Uh-huh. I've been saying this for a while. Yeah, the Christian Slater thing, it also feels like this character is sort of in conversation with his character from Pump Up the Volume 2. It's like they're the same guy in different eras, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a great pilot. I can't deny that. And I didn't know at the time when I watched it that there was actually a Sam Esmail cameo in it. In the first scene when Christian Slater first addresses Elliot on the subway, Sam Esmail is in the shot, like, between them. Which is kind of funny. This is a show that definitely lost me like before the end of the first season. I am not a puzzle box guy. And so by the time like the secret of the show started to become clear, I was like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah.
and stepped away because I don't have time for this. That shit. Like, I don't need to be keeping track of like what's real and what's fake. Like
Hallmark shows. No, thank you.
Yeah. that's exactly how I feel. Like, you know, that's what I was kind of getting at. And it's funny that we talked about this in the same episode as Utopia, because there's definitely a lot of similar kind of conspiracy stuff in both of those.
Yeah.
This is another one that if you're a fan theory person, you know, you will have a lot to like about Mr. Robot. And obviously I don't need to get into all the reasons. If you watch both the shows, you'll get it. but this, what Sarah was saying about 2015 feeling like it's like another country is so true. And there's watching this episode now, it's just wild how much of it feels prescient for like the nihilism that is going to, would then come to characterize the next 5 years after it.
Like, yeah,
the impact that a line of like, you know, what is it about the society that disappoints you so much from a therapist hits different in 2015 than it does in 2020. You know, like someone saying that now just you would laugh in their face. Like, really?
Like, yeah. Everyone steals. Exactly. That's just how it works. Oh, yeah. Word? Tell me more.
Right. And also like just the idea of Evil Corp, like, you know, at the time you could map on whatever company or, you know, nexus of companies you wanted to what E Corp is supposed to be. You know, we see the logo come up on like, it's a bank, it's a real estate company, it's blah, blah, you're like, whatever. But, you know, the idea of like, it's an evil corporation that's too big to fail doesn't cover it. Like, you know, in 2015, we could have a general idea of like, okay, like we understand that's probably Amazon is not great. And the fact that we watched this on Amazon is, again, funny. But again, in 2020, we know more. We know more than we did even in 2015. Like, we understand more clearly exactly what too big to fail really means. And, you know, post the election, post Facebook, blah, 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 blah. My point is, this pilot was getting at a lot of stuff. Even the loneliness, like how much that was an epidemic that was not really talked about. That we understand that more now than we did then. So there's definitely, it was really ahead of its time in ways that I certainly didn't appreciate, obviously couldn't appreciate at the time. So, you know, I do think the attempts to make the exciting job of fixing a server thrilling with music and quick cuts and a ride on a PJ exciting. do they work? Maybe not. I get where there's only so much you can do. And it's funny that you both said that the subway thing was not correct, because the line that they were saying is we need to wait for the queue, because that's another line that also hits differently in 2020 than it did in 2015.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Sorry. Dave is making a face.
I don't know what that means.
Because of QAnon. That's the line.
Is that just bleeped out? You guys should just bleep that on the podcast from now on. Every reference to bleep letter.
Yeah.
Anyway, as I said, I had problems with the show going forward, but Whitney is right. Like this and Devendra and Sarah are both right too, that this pilot as a pilot is undeniable. So great presentation and excellent submission. Dave.
The whole hour feels very swimmy, and they do such a good job keeping you a little off balance, you know. Malik's presentation of his character, he's relatable, but he's creepy. Like, there's so much about this episode that just, like, keeps you interested, but it's also, like, it's got a hand to your chest, keep you, like, getting too close. And it's such, like, a great analog to the lead character, right? And I also fell away from this show. You know, the higher the concept, the shorter the run should be, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. That is my, you know, law of television.
Yep.
And eventually, like, I even feel like Utopia UK in the second season started to fall under its own weight.
Agree.
And I felt increasingly about Mr. Robot that way. I think I probably, now thinking about it, left in season two, never returned to season three when it got better. But, you know.
I think that was true for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because season two was such a mess.
So not a lot to add that anybody else didn't say, except that I really do appreciate the detail of the, you know, real world computing stuff. Not only that, but also the real world non-computing adjacent stuff like social hacking as a companion to computer hacking. Like, he calls the taxi company up and just says, oh, I left my wallet in, taxi cab 2F44. You know, where's it going? I can pick up my wallet or whatever, you know.
It is funny, too, that, like, if someone of Elliot's intelligence and experience would not jump to the obvious conclusion about the therapist's boyfriend, which is the reason you can't find him on social is that he's married and he right. lied about his name.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the other little, like, them versus us thing is that he calls it a DDoS, the denial service attack. Angela refers to it as a DDoS, which is kind of funny. Just like a little touch, like a little touch. He's saving syllables, you know, cheating on.
Smarter, not harder.
I really did enjoy this pilot. Reminds me why I got sucked into Mr. Robot in the first place. I wish they could have kept it up throughout the run, but this certainly is a very strong pilot. It really paints a picture of what to expect from the character, what to expect from the show. The only thing I really didn't like was just like the convenience of Evil Corp. That's all. It just like it was just like a little too smug about that whole evil thing and the way it presents itself during the show. It was like just and it's just like a small little thing, but it's just like if I could take off one accessory looking in the mirror, it would have been that Evil Corp conceit.
All right. Well, if you said that, then I'm also going to say, what the hell Arcade would call itself Fun Society?
Like, the one for
weird has, name.
The but one yes. where Douglas Adams writes the book backwards. That's,
sure.
That's the one. Yeah. All right, so let us put this to the official vote. Devendra, what do you say?
Yay. Yes, definitely.
Sarah D. Bunting?
Oh, yay for sure.
Tara Ariana?
Me too.
All right, that means 4-4. So that means Mr. Robot now is usually listed as season 1, episode 1, not episode 0. But hey, follow your bliss. Eps. 1.0 underscore hellofriend.mov. You were hereby inducted in the extra arc again.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has the winner.
I just remembered what the loser is and started laughing. Sorry. The winner is Netflix because not only does it have an upcoming literal angel on this earth, Dolly Parton Christmas movie, which is being directed by Debbie Allen, but they got Christine Baranski to play Scrooge in it. The Baransk. Very excited for this.
The headline on Up Rocks was, this Christmas movie is the only thing that your whole family will agree on, which probably so.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Loser of the week.
Speaking of families.
Okay, listen. Podcasting, we all know, famously a visual medium. So you have to understand, I would not bring this visual joke up if it were not extremely important. So recently on Family Feud, the episode featured Kathy Lee Gifford's family, including her son-in-law, whose name is Ben, I believe, Weirda. Which is already funny. Cassidy of Cassidy and Cody fame is now old enough to be married, and her son-in-law is like related to the DeVos family, but that's beside the point. There was a moment when this guy, whose pants were super duper,
I saw that
super duper tight, where
God,
he was on camera in these very, very, very tight pants, and you could see there was a moment where he saw himself on the monitor and then realized, oh fuck, I'm about to be a meme, and he was right, because holy shit, the moose knuckle on this pants now. We'll include the video in the show notes because it must be seen to be believed. Now, I mean, I feel like I'm not talking out of turn when I say I do not have testicles. I do have boobs. And I feel like if my boobs were like tied in a knot, which is basically what it looks like is happening to this guy's genitals when you see them in these pants, I would feel
testicular
it.
Testicular Americans, explain how you don't feel this and behind the thing, like just yank them out of the chasm there. Jeez, man.
How did it get this far? Like, how at no point earlier in the day was he not like, I have to fix this shit? Like,
also, so, you have a wife.
Yeah.
Where was his wife to be like, can you just give that a
yank
there?
He needed his fancy Family Feud pants.
But,
like, that's what it was.
But, But how, like, how did he not understand before he saw himself on the monitor? Something had gone badly wrong.
Something is dividing your scrote. Hello?
It's brutal. Like, you don't, you think you understand, you think you've seen Moose Knuckle before. You have not. Like,
no.
The stuff, I don't even understand what I'm looking at in this, in this video. So please, even if you've never looked at the show notes before, you must. You must. This time.
Oh my God, please.
It's important. It's crucial, in fact, that you.
And I really am I'm looking forward to the segue to game time today.
Because I just don't understand how this
divides us painfully.
There's a guy in my school that calls McDonald's balls.
Yeah.
Because it was so tight. If you looked at it from your perspective, it was like a cold McDonald's look.
Oh no.
Hashtag let your boys breathe. Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Oh boy.
All right. Well, speaking of nuggets. Oh boy. You know what, Dad? Give that.
Oh, no segue. He couldn't.
Oh my God. All right, guys, this is the eighth game time of the season. Season scores currently sit at Tara with 4.
Whoa.
She wins today. She wins the season. Sarah with 2. And value guests with 1. Today, we are playing The Man from Simon and Garfunkel, Volume 3.
Yeah.
From John Connors, who earns himself an extra credit. Top. To remind you, the conceit of this game. Desperate for new content in the entertainment industry, they are once again locking musicians and TV actors in tiny rooms until they produce new synergistic products. Your task is to identify the mashup title of the product created from the music act and the TV show the actor is from. I'll give you a couple examples.
Okay.
If Fred Savage was locked in a room with the creator of this song...
You are the sunshine of
you would get
Stevie Wonder Years.
Yes.
The Stevie Wonder Years. Here's another example for you. Jeff Daniels teams up with this band.
You might think I'm crazy, but I don't even care. Because I can tell what's going on. It's hip to be square.
The product that they would create together is?
Huey Lewis and the Comey Rules. Just kidding. Huey Lewis and the Newsroom.
Huey Lewis and the Newsroom is correct. So
I'd
the music
that.
Act name and the TV show will blend together in some fashion. That's how the game is played.
Okay.
Steel meal situation, please, Tara Ariano.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah D. Bunting has 1 steel meal. I have 4 steel meals plus an extravaganza gong. Valued guest has 3 steel meals. So, Devinder, how this works is if you know the answer, you jump in after another player has given the wrong answer and go steel meal before Dave gives the right answer, and then you can try to steal their points.
If you don't know one of the parts, you get me to tell you. And I'll give you that half. That's how generous we are today.
Oh, okay.
All right.
This is very good. This will help me out quite a bit.
Okay.
All right. Let's throw it to Picky to see who is going first.
We will start with valued guests.
All right. That means Devendra is up first, followed by Sarah, then Tara. Are we ready to play The Man from Simon and Garfunkel, Volume 3?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes. Let me readjust my pants. Give me a second.
All right, here we go. Richard Attenborough is going to be joining forces with the creators of this song.
Do you remember when it was like September? Love was changing the minds, pretender, while chasing the clouds.
Together, they are creating a new product with a mashup title. What is that title, Devendra?
Oh, man.
Now, if you don't know pieces of the puzzle, you just ask for one of them. I'll give it to you.
What is the band, to be specific?
The band that plays that song, September, is Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, I'm so stupid. Planet Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Planet Earth, Wind, and Fire is worth 1 point. If you get it directly, we're giving you 3 points.
Oh, okay, got it.
So 3 points and 1 point, but that is worth 1 point right away. Well done.
BG.
Sarah D. Bunting. Alex Trebek joins forces with...
The chills that you spill up my back keep me filled with satisfaction when we're done. Satisfaction of what's to come.
Together, they will create what?
Oh, Jeopardy Light?
Jeopardy Light is correct.
Wow. All killer, no filler on these songs so far, by the
way. So good. So yeah. Good.
I will say there are some classics, like standards in here, too. So we're dipping. We're going pretty far back on the timeline for some of these here. Tara.
Yes.
Here's your first question. Peter Dinklage is joining forces with... Together, they are creating...
Marvin Game of Thrones.
You are correct.
I'd watch that.
Good for three. All right, back to Devendra. Jennifer Beals and...
The scars of your love, they leave me breathless. I can't help feeling we could have had it all. In the deep, you have a heart inside.
So together, they are creating a product for the entertainment industry. If you know it and can name it right off the bat, 3 points. If you're not sure, you can ask for a hint.
I got nothing here. I don't even think a hint is going to help me.
Well, let's take a stab. So you don't have an idea of the artist or the TV show in question?
I know the artist, but not quite sure of the TV show.
Well, then
that would
what?
Be the thing.
So do you want the TV show as your hint?
Sure.
All right. The TV show in question that is from Jennifer Beals is The L Word. So matching up those things. What do you think that would be? First, let me ask you, who do you think the artist performing that song is?
That actually worked. The Adele Word.
The Adele Word is good for 1 point.
Nice.
L Word. Man, I have not thought about that show in very long.
Some of these are pretty tricky with the transitions, I'm going to say. Sarah D. Bunting. I'm going to play you the artist first on this one.
How does it feel?
So that music artist is trapped in a room with what I'm guessing are the low-paid interns and desperate actors attached to the Sid and Marty Krofft television production company. Together, they are creating what?
Okay, it's Bob Dylan. Which, okay, I'm just going to guess, because that's what you got to do. Bob Dylan, Land of the Lost?
3 points on that guess. Well done. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Carol Baskin is teaming up with, and this is probably a really good thing that Pinky got you on this one.
Okay. Sarah would know that one, too. I think they've done this one on MassDev.
Okay.
Glass Tiger King.
Glass Tiger King. There's our Canadian content for today. Devendra.
Yes.
Sandra Oh. And...
I love you so much, can't count all the ways I died for you, girl, and all they can say is he's not your kind. You never get tired of putting me down, and I never know when I come around.
Let me just Let's see here. I warned you guys. Terrible at
games. This is a tough one. So you
give me this, give me the artist.
Okay, the artist is Urge Overkill. That's from the Pulp Fiction soundtrack.
Oh, okay. Urge Over Killing Eve.
Urge Over Killing Eve is absolutely correct. To Sarah D. Bunting.
I know you probably hear this every day, but I'm your biggest fan. I even got the underground shit that you did with Scam. I got a room full of your posters and your pictures, man. I like the shit you did with Rockets too, that shit was fat. Anyways, I hope you get this, man. Hit me back, just a chat. Truly yours, your biggest fan. This is Stan.
That individual is locked in a room with Richard Mulligan. What are they creating?
I hope this is right, or it's just going to be Mark talks about songs and I have to move and change my name. M&M Empty Nest.
M&M Empty Nest is good for three. Well done.
Perfect.
Gorgeous.
Tara.
Yes.
I am the eye in the sky.
That musical act is locked in a room with Heidi Klum.
That's the, they are going to come out with the Alan Parsons Project Runway.
Nice.
That song creeped me out so much when I was a kid for some reason. Yes.
Me too.
Wonder why. Interesting. All right, to Devendra, here is your song. Right, that act is trapped in a room with the following two actors, Tika Sumpner and Mark Paul Gosselaar. And I will add, I added two actors there for a very good reason.
If only I knew his filmography more than just Saved by the Bell.
Right. So do you need the TV show as a hint, I'm going to guess?
Yes.
All right, those two actors star in, or perhaps will star soon in, I'm not quite sure.
No, they're in it.
They're in it. It's on TV right now, folks. Mixed-ish.
Huh. Okay. Eurismixed-ish?
Eurismixed-ish is sure. Good for a point. Well done.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting.
The moon stood still.
That musician is trapped in a room with Oprah Winfrey.
Fats Domino-Oprah?
Sure, give you that. Or the Fats Domino-Oprah Winfrey Show, depending how far back you want to go. Good for three. Tara.
Yes.
And also in that room, Chuck Woolery.
Darlene Love Connection.
You are correct.
Poor Darlene.
Back to Devendra.
Who's like the Vandellingos? I don't know.
Bob Saget in a room with the following peeps.
Do you believe in magic? Young girl's heart, how the music can free her whenever it starts, and it's magic if the music is groovy and makes you feel happy like an old time.
So those two entities are going to create a synergistic product.
guess the title now for three, or I can give you a hint in the form of the band or the TV show.
Just give me the band. Come on.
The band is The Loving Spoonful.
Full Loving Spoonful.
The Loving Spoonful House, but we're going to give
that
to you.
Yeah, The Loving Spoonful. Oh, yeah, sure.
It was in there somewhere in the DNA of that answer. Back to Sarah D. Bunting.
Don't procrastinate, don't articulate, girl, it's getting late, you just didn't wait around. A little less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more bite, a little less bark, a little less bite, a little more spark.
So that dude's in a room with Nick Kroll.
That dude is in a room with Nick Kroll.
Mm-hmm.
Good for them both.
Yep. While you're thinking, I just want to say how tempted I was to clip something from In the Ghetto, which is one of the worst songs I've ever heard in my life.
So bad.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's painful. I'm going to say that it's the Elvis Press League.
Oh, nice.
Perfect.
The Elvis Press League is correct.
We'll put nothing.
Together.
Good job.
All right. This will take us to our halfway mark for Tara.
Mm-hmm.
We have the voice of Alan Reed with the following musical act.
What was the name?
The voice of Alan Reed, R-E-E-D.
Oh, shit.
Can ask for a hint.
Yeah, that's Stone Temple Pilots, I think. Stone Temple Pilot. Okay, what is the show?
Alan Reed was a voice on the Flintstones.
Oh, okay. Flintstone Temple Pilots.
Yeah, Flintstone Temple Pilots is correct. Good for one. All right, let's hear the scores here at our halfway mark.
Oh boy. Sarah just pulled ahead thanks to me not knowing who the hell Alan Reed is. Sarah has 15 points. I have 13 points. Devendra has 5 points.
All right.
I thought that was Pearl Jam, so luck of the draw.
I thought it was Pearl Jam and I heard it too. I have sort of grunge blindness.
So, sure.
Yeah. Back to Devendra. Fred Rogers in a room with
take these broken wings and learn to fly again, learn to live so free. When we hear the voices sing, the book of love will open up and let us in.
What do you think they are making together?
Yeah, give me the artist, of course. It's all jumbled up.
Musical artist is a band called Mr. Mister.
Mr. Rogers Neighborhood.
Mr. Rogers Neighborhood. Good for one. Back to Sarah D. Bunting.
Many battles are lost, but you never see the end of the road while you're traveling.
Those guys are in a room with John Ritter through Methods.
They're in a room with John Ritter.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's Crowded House.
You may recall in previous games they were in a room with what's his name? From Blackadder. Why can't I remember his name?
Oh, yeah. I can't either.
Rowan Atkinson?
No.
Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Laurie. Geez.
Yes.
God. Anyways, okay, but this time, John Ritter.
This time it's John Ritter. So I have to hope that there was some spinoff called Three's a Crowd and guess Three's a Crowded House.
There was.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Do you actually not know that Three's a Crowd was a TV show?
I must have known.
Okay.
Somewhere in my lizard brain.
That was an amazing, just random word.
Amazing.
Pull.
Yeah. That it was like, but maybe there was a sequel. Okay, here we go.
I think it was only one season. Yeah, he gets married and then it's like him and his wife and her dad.
Oh, okay. Wasn't the dad super famous too?
I think he was like a character actor. Oh, okay. I mean, you would recognize his face. I don't remember his name.
I think it was Laurence Olivier.
It was not
Laurence. Oh, okay. Question 18 for Tara.
Proceed.
Yes.
Catherine Morris in a room with...
Unforgettable, that's what you are. Unforgettable.
I would never have remembered what her show was if we hadn't just talked about her in Death of a Cheerleader. This is Nat King Cold Case.
Yes.
Nice.
3 points. All right, Devendra, we're getting a little further back in time in some of these questions here, so good luck.
Yeah, it's okay. I know. It's all bad for me and music.
Jerry Mathers, the actor, in a room with...
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever.
What is the show?
The show in question is Leave It to Beaver.
Jerry Mathers.
Yeah, I'm out.
Can't figure it out backwards. All right.
No.
Anybody else?
Glenn Steelmeal.
All right, the answer, anybody? Peggy Lee Vitt.
Oh. I was like, is it Eartha Kitt? Like, Leave It to Beaver, the Kitt.
All right, Sarah, ready for your next?
Yeah.
Mike Judge, sitting in a room with...
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like the ones I used to know.
I just like to note that even though that's not what he's singing, now I have Meli Kalikimaka stuck in my fucking head again, and I will for 2 weeks. I believe that the fine mashup produced by this union is Bing, Cross, Beavis, and Butthead.
It is. Well done.
In fairness to Bing, I'm pretty sure Meli Kalikimaka is Dean Martin.
And it's both. Oh. It's all. The Andrews sisters are also tangled up in that shit somewhere. It's bad.
They're like a Hydra.
You know,
or a Leviathan. Yeah. All right, back to Tara.
Be seeing you in all the old familiar places.
In a room with Trevor Noah.
I think that's Billie Holiday show.
You are correct. Back to Devendra for question 22.
In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning, death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
In a room with Tatiana Maslany.
Orphan Black Sabbath.
Orphan
hey!
Black Sabbath. There
something,
we go.
I know something.
Those are the three-pointers we like to see. All right, back to Sarah. Matt Bomer in a room with...
I've heard people say that
too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that. There's many times that we've loved and we've shared love and made love.
I had that opening quote on my college yearbook page. Barry White collar.
I was like 100% here comes Seven Nation Army because I was thinking it was going to be the White Stripes.
Leave all the snakes alone. Tara.
Yep.
Papa loves mambo. Mama loves mambo. Look at him sway with it, getting so gay with it, shouting ole with it, wow.
That performer also in a room with Brandy Norwood.
Okay. Well, she's from Moesha. And I thought I knew who that performer was.
Who did you think it was?
I thought it was Dean Martin.
Okay.
Okay, who's the artist?
The artist is Perry Como.
Oh. Perry Como-isha.
Perry Como-isha is correct.
I would
an
also
update.
Watch that.
Wow.
The dad from Three's a Crowd was also the guy from Soap, Robert Mandan.
That's where he's from.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty much his Chester Tate.
Yes. He was the boss of Benson.
Devendra, here is your second to last question. We've got Edie Falco in a room with...
And you know he never showed his face again.
I could reach those high notes if I wanted to, but I don't want to.
Oh, man. What is...
Borrow the pants.
I feel like that... Yeah, I always jumble a lot of these songs together because I just hear them so much in pop culture. What is the artist?
Borrow the pants. Yeah. The musical artist is Jackie Wilson.
Ah, Nurse Jackie Wilson.
Nurse Jackie Wilson. Good for one. Back to Sarah D. Bunting for your second to last. We've got... Nev Campbell in a room with...
I'm more than a bird, I'm more than a plane, I'm more than some pretty face beside a train, and it's not easy to be me.
There are a lot of these that I would watch. This is not one of them. Party of Five for Fighting.
Party of Five for Fighting. Yes, that song was called Superman, which was from Dawson's Creek, so it was all very confusing. Tar Ariana?
Yep.
Are you ready?
Yes.
We've got Dave Foley stuck in a room with...
Kids in the Hall and Oates.
Kids in the Hall
this
and
what
Oates.
Watch.
Good for three. Have I ever told you my Maneater story before?
No.
Grade five music class, I think. We had the teacher really wanted us to learn Maneater as her favorite song. It must have been out then.
Oh, yeah. You did tell us
but
this.
But she knew
oh,
she really
shit.
Couldn't get away with it.
Uh-huh.
So... we were given directions in case anybody came knocking, like the principal or anything like that. So this is how the class went. She's, you know, everybody's singing. Watch out, Porsche. Rainbow Connection. The lover. To yeah. her credit, she had a backup plan. And
amazing.
It worked.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, everybody's last question coming at you. Starting with Devendra, we've got Penny Marshall. Penny Marshall trapped in a room with a person who gave us this.
Such a cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin, but don't go in.
What is the show?
The show is Laverne and Shirley. Any idea of
now,
connection?
Yeah, now I think I have the artist wrong, too. So, yeah. Giving up.
Giving up on this one. The artist, anybody?
Laverne and Shirley Bassey.
Shirley Bassey. Laverne and Shirley Bassey.
Ah, ha, ha. Yeah.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, here is your last mashup. We've got Mr. John Hamm stuck in a room. Speaking of tight pants, stuck in a room with these guys.
I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A women go and men wonder.
All right, those guys and John Hamm making beautiful music together create what?
Mad Men at Work.
Mad Men at Work is correct. Quickly, before we get on to our very last question, scores, please, Tara.
Devinder has 10 points. Sarah D. Bunting has a perfect score, 30 points.
Wow. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
I have 23.
All right.
Not so to be.
Up. The last question has two possible answers with two clips.
Oh, all right.
I just saw it and I thought, what? Maybe, did I remember? I did. Here we go. Chris Rock in a room with either...
Sailing takes me away to where I'm going.
Or...
Okay.
Don't try to compare us to another bad little fat. I'm a Mac and I'm bad.
Well, it's Everybody Hates Christopher Cross or Everybody Hates Criss Cross.
Yeah, Criss Crosses. Either way, good for 3 points. All right, let's hear the final regulation scores, which I think might actually be our first perfect game ever.
Okay, well, Devinder had 10 points. I had 26 points. Sarah D. Bunting is our victor with the aforementioned 30 points.
Well,
a perfect.
Done. All right, I'm giving Sarah an additional 10 day points,
whoa!
Which I think might be the first sweep game. We've had, don't quote me on that. I haven't been keeping track of that. I'm not a statistician.
I don't think that's true. I think Tara's been, Tara's thrown a no-no before, but
nah, amazing work,
I'll take it.
All right. Well, we've
glad
got
it was
the
this one.
Tiebreaker, which we will not need in regulation. So let's play it now. First person to shout out the correct answer will win a future steel meal. Everybody's in on this. Everybody ready?
Yes.
Yes.
I will let you know that the person in the room with the musician is Gabriel Byrne. Here we go.
Beethoven treatment.
Beethoven treatment is stupendously and stupidly
so
correct.
I was like, fifth therapy?
Bum, 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 bum. All right. Well done, everybody. Sarah with the victory.
So
Tara
culture.
With the steel meal.
Thank you.
Sarah.
Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We hopped into Amazon's Utopia remake before going around the dial with stops at Enola Holmes, Julie and the Phantoms, The Legend of Korra, 30 for 30, and Karate Town. Whitney hacked the Extra Hot Great cannon to get Mr. Robot's pilot in. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time from John. Next up, the episode's shows became themselves on Extra Extra Hot Great and on the next EHG Prime, The Comedy Store. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Stop thinking about something else when I'm talking to you.
Sarah D. Bunting.
This is just way bluer than what I was expecting.
And Devendra Hardawar.
These pants are still way too tight.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra. Oh, great.
Have I really lost it this time? No, no. Last night happened. It was real. I know. I know. I know. I realize I'm saying all of this to an imaginary person. But I created you. I didn't create this.